Get ready. Get comfy for the next Nonprofit Insider Podcast episode.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Another episode of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. My goodness, we're like 2.5 months into 2025, and there's just so much happening. We appreciate the fact that you're here listening to the episode. You never know what's going on in the news these days. But when you have some amazing leaders that come to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast, you know we're going to try to deliver the best. Real fast, make sure you like, subscribe. You know all the deal. One of the big things, be sure to rate the podcast. Go in. Just leave some positive words. If you like the people that you're hearing, you know we took a long time until we started getting people and guests to interview. And so if you're liking what you're hearing, just let it be known. If you're not, just listen, tell the truth, whatever. It is what it is. We get it. Because today we're going at the top. And when you have Pat Adabo, Executive Director of Oregon Adaptive Sports, here, this is what it needs to be. And so we've come full circle and bringing some of the highest people we can. And when you have executive directors, it is what it is. Pat, how are you this morning? Afternoon, I should say.
Yeah, it is now. It is. I'm doing well, Swim. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thanks for creating this great space for people to share information and have these conversations. I think it's needed in this nonprofit industry. So.
Yeah, you know, I want to start with this because you and I, we had a chance to chat, of course, before you hopped on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and you said something that really struck with me where you said, because, you know, we're kind of talking, figuring out the direction we're going to take this episode, and you said there's a rawness to this job, and that really stuck with me because it really gave me a deeper sense of the way you kind of interact with your group, interact with your team, the approach that you kind of bring to it. So let me start with this. You know, you likely have given over a million elevator speeches as an exec director. And we're going to dive deep into the inner workings of your organization. But give our audience the elevator style run through of the organization you lead in Oregon Adaptive Sports.
Yeah, sure. So Oregon Adaptive Sports is based on the principle of that we believe in the transformative power of the outdoors. We know that when you get outside, there's an innumerable amount of benefits that you receive, mental health benefits, physical health benefits, sense of community, sense of purpose, all these things that create a happy, fulfilling, healthy life. And at Oregon Adaptive Sports, we work to create as much access to the outdoors as possible for people with disabilities. We do that through outdoor sports such as skiing, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing. In the summer, we ride bikes, road bikes, mountain bikes. We've got a paddling program. And the kind of meat of our work is centered around removing the barriers to the outdoors that are the most common or often the biggest barriers for people with disabilities that they face. Access to state-of-the-art adaptive sports equipment, personalized, well-trained instruction from the world's greatest staff and volunteers, and above all else, keeping it affordable. A lot of these things I mentioned are not typically affordable sports. Skiing, mountain biking, these things come with hefty price tags, and we basically give it all away. Our athletes pay little to nothing to participate with us. So making sure people have, you know, the right team to support them, the right gear, and then they can have those programs be financially accessible as well are three of the kind of biggest pillars that we focus on. But at the end of the day, it's just about getting outside, getting as many people outside and to experience all of those benefits. You know, it's something I think that pretty much every human can relate to, whether it's sitting outside in a park with your family or it is, you know, shredding down some mountain somewhere. The benefits, I think, are pretty universal.
We might have a little time. I want to get into a little bit of like how you even, not say got started in that space, but knowing a little bit more about how you first started to get into the world of those types of sports. Because that's something for me, like I'd never done it growing up. And so the way that you all do it is just so interesting. And I want to get a little bit more into the details of of OAS, because when people hear about the work you're doing, it kind of sound like the quintessential nonprofit, right? That 501c3 style charity, they're doing good in the community. I mean, just hearing you, I can tell our audience is thinking like, yeah, that sounds like some really cool shit, to be honest with you. But I don't want to put the work that your team does in a stereotypical box, because I think that can minimize the work you all are doing, you and all your employees on a daily basis. So let me ask you this. How does your organization define impact on a year-to-year basis? What does success look like for Oregon Adaptive Sports when thinking of the clients that you have?
Yeah, that's a great question, Swim. I think, there's so much talk about impact. You always hear these terms like inputs and outputs. That's a common thing you hear in the nonprofit world, and outputs versus outcomes, and how are you measuring your success? And I answer that question in grant applications all the time. And I think we try to narrow it down to a few different things to speak to the impact that we have. And I think if I was just to summarize it in, the best way possible, we have our quantitative numbers. So we always want to look at, the data points of how many people are we serving, the demographics of those individuals, ages, disabilities, race, ethnicity, home origin, in terms of like where do they actually live. We serve people not only in our local community, but from all across the country. So we can look at all those numbers. And we have our nice graphs and stuff, and it's nice to see the numbers always going up. We want to be serving more people. We want to be providing more program hours. So we measure a lot of those outcomes or outputs, I guess, in that sense, the data points and numbers. I think the harder thing to define, but what I see as impact, is just the continued evolution of the outdoor industry and outdoor kind of community space, both here locally, but also regionally, nationally, globally, outdoor, and really incorporating a lot of sport. And something that I continue to see, and these are the things that are hard to measure, but it's increased representation, seeing more and more, visuals, images on websites of outdoor brands that feature people with disabilities or people of color or people of, traditionally super underrepresented populations in the outdoor space. I've seen a dramatic change in that in the time that I've been involved. We are seeing more and more things like requests for letters of support for other people's applications because we're seeing more
Really?
Businesses that their focus is not adaptive or disability, but they're seeing opportunities to improve whatever it is that is their focus to incorporate services to those people. So it's funny, we see a lot of these grant opportunities and things that come along that we're applying for, but we're also submitting four or five letters of support to other organizations that are writing grants because it's some kind of tangential benefit to us. I think just continued to see better understanding and discussion around language and terminology. And, in terms of the disability space, that's something that's constantly evolving. And it's just nice to see like people asking the right questions. And so there's so much of that impact that I see in our community, especially here locally in Central Oregon and Bend, Oregon. That's so hard to measure, but it is tangible. It's happening. And it's exciting to see. It's certainly, and it's motivating to see that. That stuff motivates me way more than the numbers. I'm kind of a numbers guy. I like talking numbers and I like to see the things track. But when I'm just seeing the stuff in the community and yeah, that's the hard thing to measure, but I think that's where the impact really lies.
Yeah, spoken like a true leader for sure, because I can imagine you're in it when you're executive director. I can imagine you're inundated with numbers and graphs and facts and stats. But I could imagine when you got into this space, you probably didn't get into space thinking of numbers and things like that. You were trying to change lives, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that was my background was I was introduced to the outdoors when I was in middle school. I was didn't grow up in a super outdoorsy family, as they say, but found a great adventure education program in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, and that it changed my life. As a young teenager, it's amazing how certain experiences can be so transformative for you, and that's what ultimately led to my pursuit of my degree at Warren Wilson, where we both, went to undergrad. And yeah, I certainly, and I fell in, truly like in love with this part of this outdoor industry because of the challenge to it and seeing how, it was so engaging to be able to create these opportunities and to problem solve. And working in the adaptive side of the outdoor industry is something that's every day is different. You know, every person that you work with from, you know, it's awesome because you can go in and, you know, we do a lot of skiing here, right, at Oregon Adaptive Sports, and we have these participant intake forms, and you could have two participants that on paper present the exact same age, same height, same weight, same disability, but the way that they come in the door could be completely different. One person could be using a wheelchair. One person could be using crutches. They could have totally different goals or ambitions on how they want to pursue. One person may want to get out and go as fast and ski as hard as they can. The other person wants to just spend time with their husband or their spouse or something like that. And that's what I've loved about it, right? Is like creating those opportunities for people to pursue their own goals and, you know, solving those problems, you know, with them so that they can achieve those goals. So yeah, that's certainly why I got into it, was just creating those opportunities and feeling like I could play a part helping somebody, you know, gain all those great benefits that we've already mentioned. So.
Wow. Once again, I'm joined by Pat Adabo. I said your last name right?
You got it, yep.
Okay, listen, you know my name is Nadar Kareem. Swim's only a nickname. So I know how it is. So I want to make sure I'm respecting your name because I know people are going to want to reach out to you. Seriously, you see it. You speak the language. You know it. I mean, gosh, there's just so many amazing things. Executive Director of Oregon Adaptive Sports. They're based out of Bend, Oregon. And like you said, Pat, you and I, we graduated from the same college. You know, we both graduated from Warren Wilson College at different years. And it's interesting because you graduated in 2008. I mean, to talk about the height of the financial crisis. And I think many people felt that impact of the 2007-2008 crash, I mean, for years, right? And I know I just talked to a friend of a friend who their parents lost their house and they're still feeling the effects. And I know we just had COVID-19 or the heights of COVID-19 have kind of passed us, but I think there are many actions that executive directors and board members were doing that deserve to really be talked about. And so real fast, take me into your mind and what you were feeling once COVID-19 entered your lexicon, because there are many people in positions of power and influence like yourself who had to make some really tough decisions.
Yeah, that was certainly interesting times. You know, I think it is in times of crisis and that leaders and organizations are able to really shine. And yeah, like many of us, like a lot of these kind of big traumatic events of our generation, I remember very clearly some certain events leading up to that, you know, especially the onset of the pandemic. The weekend before everything shut down, so it was Friday the 13th, March 13th, that kind of everything really snowballed. And the weekend prior to that, we were on a traveling ski event up at Mount Hood. It's a couple hours here from Bend, and we were working with individuals living with very advanced ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. So that's a neurodegenerative disease that, if you know anything about it, it's just a terrible terminal disease, and it robs people of most of their physical functions.
Many people, I think of like the ALS bucket challenge from back in the day.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, exactly. This is sort of a long anecdote, but you know, I remember it very clearly because that population, you know, a lot of times the challenge for that population as the disease progresses is avoiding getting sick, because it's not so much that they can be generally healthy despite the, you know, the loss of a lot of physical function, but what can be often, you know, super dangerous for them is getting sick, and often that leading to pneumonia, and then their body not being able to clear that pneumonia, right? The liquid in their lungs and things like that. So anyway, COVID, this whole respiratory virus, we were up at Mount Hood working with these Crips, and it was like, what is going on? Like, what, you know, and there was hand sanitizers everywhere, and we just, you know, we were doing what we could, but nobody really knew what was going on. Fortunately, we went through that weekend, you know, we gave some people some great experiences. As far as we know, nothing came of that weekend, that things, you know, hadn't really spread too much around here yet, but it was just a week later. It was the day before our annual big skiing fundraiser called the Ski for All, that was supposed to be March 14th that year, that everything shut down. So they shut down the ski areas. They, I mean, the whole world, the whole country shut down that day. And man, there was so much uncertainty. OAS, when you start thinking about all of our donors, all of our athletes, all our volunteers, we're thousands of people big as a community. And I think the first thing when a crisis pops up is there's just so many questions. People just don't know. It's the uncertainty that at the onset of any crisis, I think that brings the most anxiety and most struggle for people. And so I think it's really important for people in positions of power, of leadership, to also ask questions and to just do an assessment of what do we know and what don't we know. And there are certainly things we don't know. And but you can at least be as clear as possible and communicate to people, this is what we know, this is what we know we don't know. And just keep providing information as much as you can, especially in those early days of any kind of crisis. And I think, we did that to some degree. We were a bit of a conduit of information from things like the ski areas here, because I was getting direct information from the general manager of Mount Bachelor. I remember talking to him on the phone at like 10 o'clock at night, the night before our big event. So I had information that a lot of other people didn't have. And so we were trying to figure out ways to communicate that to people of, what was happening, what was the plan, what do we know, what do we not know? And then as things start to settle, you can start to create a vision and chart some sort of course through a crisis like that. I think, again, we did that. We're a nonprofit. We're of such that, our funding comes in these big waves. We get mostly private dollars, whether it's from, businesses or individuals or foundations. So we're not relying on earned income. We, like I said, we charge little to nothing to our athletes. So, ironically, when our programming slows down, we're actually losing less money. So we can kind of pause for a minute and kind of see, we have that luxury to assess like, okay, well, we have money in the bank, we can make a plan for the next month, 3 months, 6 months, et cetera. So we were given that opportunity to do that. And so, after kind of getting through the initial wave, I remember, so the way our organization is structured is we have a core team of, it's now 7 full-time staff. At the time, there was 5 of us. And those are the 5 of us that work full-time, salaried year-round. And then we have seasonal employees and hundreds of volunteers. And so the 5 of us that were working year-round, I kept them on staff. And I remember about 3 or 4 weeks into the pandemic, everybody had kind of been working from home, checking in. We actually shut the business down for a week. I still paid everybody. I was like, just take the week off, get your lives situated. And then we brought everybody back. And I remember having a real heart-to-heart conversation with the team. And we went out to the park and we all sat socially distant from each other. And I asked them, I said, right now here we are. We are this nonprofit that, has this mission to provide access to the outdoors. And I said, be honest with yourself, like who's benefiting the most from our organization right now? And, I let people think about it. And I said, well, my answer right now, it's us. It's the 5 of us, because we're the ones that are still sitting here getting a paycheck and we're feeling pretty secure in our jobs. Cause I know the organization has money in the bank and people are all, distracted as they should be on the issues at hand. But I said, let's think about this and let's use this as a call to action. How can we take this and start to get some momentum back in our mission? And I think that, it was a little hard to hear, but I think it resonated. And I think that the team realized like, okay, yeah, we're actually in a good place, all things considered. And like, what can we do? And I think that just got the wheels starting to turn on how can we once again adapt what we do. Adaptive is, it's our cheesy line. Adaptive is our middle name, right? Like, this is what we do. We figure out ways to solve problems. And in the words of Warren Wilson, Professor Marty O'Keefe, you start small, you go slow, but go. And that's what we did. We started, we read all the rules, we did all the got all the supplies. We did everything we could, and we just started with like individual cycling lessons once the ski season was over. And I remember putting somebody in a hand cycle wearing a face shield and a mask and gloves. And I was like, well, I can get this person who's an adult with cerebral palsy. I can get him in the hand cycle, and then he's able to ride independently, and we can stay super far apart. He just needs that support of the equipment and getting into the bike. And then boom, he has access to that sport again. And so we kind of did this big reset. So it's kind of a long answer to your question, but I think for me, it was like, first and foremost, like when you have a crisis, like you got to communicate. You got to just, and you got to be honest. What do you know? What don't you know? Because that's all people want. It's just information. And then, second is you got to adapt, and then you got to move on. You got to make a plan. And we were just kind of zeroed in. What is our mission? How can we execute this? Even if we can only serve 20 people this summer because all the rules have changed, like, let's serve those 20 people. And then, yeah, we just kind of started from there, and then we've rebuilt, we kind of, everything kind of snowballed once again for us back to where it is now, which is, record-setting numbers and all that sort of stuff. So.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. I just imagine with an organization like you all, where you're not in a building performing the large majority of your work. You're outside doing this. I can imagine actually a lot of people probably were coming to you all, being like, "Please, are you all continuing?" Because we were all trying to get outside as best as we could, but staying apart. So I can imagine you all were busy.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, it was so critical, that everybody said this during that time, now more than ever, and it was true for so many things, right? Like at that point, more than ever, people needed access to the outdoors. It was safer. It was the best way for people to get exercise, to connect with other people. I mean, it truly was more important than it ever was before, to get people outside, to have some real face-to-face, at least, at a distance interaction with people. I think it took us a few weeks to kind of get ourselves to a place where we felt, stable enough as individuals to do that. But I was super proud of my team and this community for rallying and going with the plan and making it happen. So.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that really stuck out again, Pat, when you and I had we had chatted a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, hey, we can go any direction. I said we could go and we could talk about Oregon Adaptive Sports. We could kind of have that be the highlight of the interview. I could really talk about you and have you be the highlight. And you said no, so I really wanted to be leadership, and that was something that really stuck out to me because it's clear that that's something that's really important to you. And I want to talk board of directors for a little bit, because one of the things I noticed when looking at the last 3 years of your IRS 990 tax returns was that you had 50% of your board remain the same over the previous 3 years. I mean, that's a solid sign of stability. In your mind, what contributes to your board's loyalty? What tricks are you doing to keep the board moving in a positive direction?
Yeah, the board of directors and executive director relationship is the most important relationship in a nonprofit. And this is something that is preached across many nonprofit leaders, educational resources, and it is so true. And, it is one of, I think, many an ED's favorite topic is to complain about their board, right?
It does sound like something I hear a lot. It
And
does.
I think that's an issue, right? I think that that's an issue. It's a problem that is pervasive in so much of the industry. And when I took over as executive director, it was part of my, internal agenda from day one to build and maintain a super strong relationship with my board of directors. They're my boss, certainly, but it's also they are this guiding, group of individuals and stakeholders that their decisions have a ripple effect to thousands of people, and it's my job to carry out a lot of their decisions. So it's super critical that we have a strong and positive relationship. I think, like any team, you want to build a winning team. You want to build a team where everybody has a role. They know what their role is. They know how to make an impact. They feel valued. They know what's expected of them. A lot of board members come to the table, with a rough idea of like where their expertise lies or maybe how they can help. But I think it is up to the executive director to paint that vision and make those board members feel valued and know how to have an impact. So when you talk about stability, you know, that's an interesting thing, like board terms and durations and things. So we actually have, we have terms at OAS. So I've now cycled more than entirely through a board of directors. So the board that I have now isn't, well, it was entirely different than the board I started with. I did just bring back on a board member that was one of our founders, who I love, Colleen. She's amazing. But I've cycled through, you know, 20 something different board members. So we actually do have a fair amount of turnover, but it's prescribed. So you board members for OAS, they get elected for a 3-year term. They can do a second 3-year term. If they would like to return, they have to wait a year off the board, and then they can reapply and get back on the board if we have a spot and would like them back. And so the way, you know, all that stuff I was talking about, I like to look at those 3 years terms of, you know, these opportunities for somebody to have a big impact. And what I want is for every board member that comes on at the end of each 3 years to be able to reflect and say, yeah, I made a difference and here's what I did. And I hope that they can list off at least a handful of things that they helped with. And some can be kind of bigger team impacts, like, you know, we grew by 25% or our revenue tripled or whatever, but also that they personally introduced somebody to the organization that benefited from our service, or they connected us with a foundation that wasn't aware of our work that's now supporting the cause. And, you know, I've thought about it similar to like, actually like getting a degree, right? You know, one of the nice things about college or, you know, educational institutions for a lot of people is they're so finite. Like you have these set calendars and you know when it starts and you know when it ends. And there's this big moment of satisfaction at the end where you get your degree and you do all this hard work. And I want the board to have a similar feeling. And so I think terms are really great in that sense. But, you know, those toxic, challenging relationships, when you hear people complaining about their board, and I mean, that's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can't have that relationship with your board. Is it, you're ultimately doing a disservice to your community, not let alone making your own job just miserable by having a tough group of people to work with.
Well, I mean, cause you said the ED mm-hmm. board relationship, I've never heard it like this before, is the most important relationship. I mean, that really sticks out.
100%. Yeah. If you're an organization that has a big enough size that you have a full-time executive director, which in my opinion, if you have a nonprofit and you have an executive director, the executive director should be full-time. You know, I see it from time to time. I see these jobs that are posted for like half-time EDs. And I'm like, that you should either make it a volunteer job, you know, or find the money to make it a full-time job, because being an ED is not a part-time job. It's something you're working on 100% of your time. And yeah, it's just so critical, you know, because the ED is the one that's doing it every day, and they're clarifying that direction and that vision of the board, and they're translating that into the true impact of whatever your mission is. And if that relationship is not solid, there's no way the organization can function effectively.
This is why you come to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. Listen, don't go anywhere. Listen, do me a favor, actually. Hit the share button. You're listening to Pat. You hear what he's saying. You know there's someone in your circle that needs to benefit from this. We're going to take a quick pause. We're going to come back. I want to ask Pat some questions related around money. I know that's a topic that is on the mind of a lot of nonprofits now more than ever. In 2025, there's a lot of uncertainty happening. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Pat. He's going to tell us some more.
Hey, it's Jessica Pangparks from learnwithjpp.com. Did you catch my conversation with Swim on the Nonprofit Insider Podcast a few weeks ago? Check it out now to learn my insights as a volunteer engagement thought leader. As the principal consultant at Learn with JPP, I work with nonprofits who give a care to build trust, create impact, and inspire belonging through ethical volunteer engagement frameworks. Want to jumpstart or grow your volunteer engagement journey? Right now, I'm offering Nonprofit Insider listeners 10% off of my one-on-one coaching sessions. Go to learnwithjpp.com/coaching. That's learnwithjpp.com/coaching and enter InsiderPod at checkout. That's InsiderPod, all one word, on learnwithjpp.com/coaching. This offer applies to the first 5 people who use the code InsiderPod. I'm here to help you solve that urgent challenge you're facing around board member engagement, grow professionally as a leader of volunteers, or realign processes with your organizational values. Go to learnwithjpp.com/coaching and enter InsiderPod, all one word, to claim this exclusive offer.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Nonprofit Insider Podcast. You know I'm your host, Swin Kareem. I'm joined with Executive Director of Oregon Adaptive Sports, Pat Adabo. Pat, it's good to see you, man. It's been so long. We used to walk together at Warren Wilson. So now seeing you all these years later, you're looking fresh, man. Did your hair used to be longer at one point?
It was longer like 6 hours ago. Yeah, I mean, it comes and goes. I grow my hair out a few months, and then I cut it off. And it's been through different styles over the years, for sure. So, feeling fresh today, definitely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listen, welcome back again. I want to talk to you about money because, when we connected a few weeks ago, I had reached out to you and I said, hey, your 990s are pretty impressive. I mean, they show pretty much a 20% year-over-year revenue increase. And you told me, no, Swim, go back even further. So you said, go back to 2017. So I did. So I want to read some numbers for our audience real fast, because when you took over as ED for OAS, again, Oregon Adaptive Sports, I mean, you've had an impressive run since then. In 2016, AOS had $336,000 in revenue, but after adding that year's expenses, you all were $88,000 in the hole. You don't have to be a mathematician, though. That's not ideal. You had $226,000 in assets. You take over in 2019, and with that prior year having $500,000 in revenue, $400,000 in revenue minus expenses, $283,000 in assets. All that to say, for the last couple of years, I mean, you last year's taxes, you had $1.1 million in revenue, $900,000 in assets. And this all happened under your 5 watch. Again, you have to be a mathematician. Those are good numbers. I mean, just amazing. And you did it during a global pandemic, which we were talking about earlier. I know you didn't do this alone, but how did this happen? How were you and your team and your board, how were you all able to do such impressive numbers with you at the helm?
Yeah, we've had an amazing run for sure, and I hope we can continue it. I think the message here is having that clear vision and the drive to achieve the vision. I was fortunate to come from a great program in Colorado most recently. I worked there from 2010 to 2016 that was further along in their process of developing adaptive sports and was extremely well funded. And so I saw the possibility. I knew that this was a cause that people are willing to invest in. And when I came to OAS, I saw an organization with an incredible amount of grassroots support, a lot of passion and love in the community, but it needed a little bit of help clarifying the vision and showing and thinking a little bigger about what's possible. And so, yeah, you're right. When I took over as ED, we were coming off a year where we had lost 70, 80 grand. And as somebody who I relocated my full-time job here to work for the organization, you know, I think I had a little skin in the game. And so I felt the urgency to get the financial footing on better ground and start that process. But I think it's ultimately down to having that vision, of which I still feel like are far from achieving, and just knowing what's possible and being willing to think bigger. You know, when it comes down to pure, you know, finances, there's your revenue side of things. You know, what are you trying to raise money for? And then there's your expenses and having really strong expense control. And a really great board treasurer, he just termed off just last month, actually. And he provided some incredible guidance and mentorship for me over these last 6 years on how to look at, analyze, and really plan for our financial future as an organization. And that, you know, those are always, expense control is always a big thing for him. You got to be able to create a budget and stick to the budget. And most importantly, if you miss on the budget, you have to analyze it and talk about why. You know, why did we spend so much more money on our seasonal labor than we were expecting? Or why is this cost so much higher? And using the numbers to help you tell a story. I think it is important for executive directors, especially in, you know, kind of my echelon of nonprofits, this like small to medium small nonprofit, you know, $1 million a year or so. It's important for those executive directors to be close to the numbers. You know, we're not big enough yet where I can afford to have a CFO on my team or something like that, that, you know, that's 100% of their focus. So it's important that that the ED can look at those numbers and can tell the story. And I think for driving the revenue growth, you know, it's about having really clear plans. I think for nonprofits of similar sizes, you know, from that, your small, you know, couple hundred thousand to your $1 million budget, it can be pretty easy to just kind of chase different funding opportunities because you maybe you're mostly eligible or there's a new relationship, but typically those aren't sustainable. You gotta take the time to set really clear visions and plans and do your best to guess on how much that's going to cost. You know, just before we jumped on the call here, I'm working on a 3-year budget for one of our strategic initiatives and, you know, penciling things out into the hundreds of thousands of dollars on what it's going to cost. But I find that when you set the need first and what it's going to cost, and then you communicate that out to your community, the dollars will follow. You know, you'll find the money, whether it's a grant or it's a donor or it's a sponsorship. If you can go to them and say, we need $53,000 for this project, and this is how it, you know, advances our strategic vision, how it advances our mission, they're going to give it to you, or they're going to give you part of it, and they're going to introduce you to somebody that can help you with another part of it. I think a lot of times, and I did this in my first couple of years too, we felt a little aimless. And I was like, well, here's a grant that says, if you do this kind of program, we'll give you $10,000 or something. And so we write the grant, we get the money. And then we're like having to start from scratch, creating some program that we don't already do, or that's like somewhat related to what we do. And it's just it's a dangerous and unsustainable path for nonprofits. I think in that small to medium size, that's pretty easy to chase after. So yeah, I think managing your expenses and having a really clear plan of what you need to make it happen, you know, that then the results will follow.
If you didn't hear what Pat just said, go back 3 minutes and listen to everything he just said. I mean, just talk about hitting the nail on the head. I mean, wow. It's funny because I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, I know I've got more questions, but I'm thinking to myself, you're really putting in the work, right? We could just hear as you're answering some of these questions, you're putting in the work. And there's this old adage, of course, that it all leads back to the mission, right? I mean, you're not doing the stuff you're doing if you didn't believe in Oregon Adaptive Sports. So I really just real fast here. This sounds silly to ask you, but do you believe in the mission that you're doing? Like how does that resonate with you? What is the mission of OAS and the work that gets done there?
You know, again, the mission of our organization is to create access to the transformative power of the outdoors. And that's not the verbatim mission you'll read on our website. It's sort of a combination of two statements, but 100% with all of my being, I believe in that mission. Absolutely. I have 2 6-month-old twins at home. And the greatest thing that we do as a family already is just getting outside. And we go for a walk every day. We let the boys sleep outside in the morning for their morning nap. That's always their best nap of the day. They just are old enough now that we can put them in the little cross country skiing trailer and take them cross country skiing. And you know, already those experiences have become so much more meaningful and beneficial to me and to my wife. And I hope it's, you know, just setting this great foundation for them as, you know, they start to grow up. And I mean, I live and breathe it every day, just the need to get outside. So yeah, with all of my being, I believe it. And I see it every day, you know, in our program, the people that we serve. And gosh, there's just so much, like, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of times, like 2025 is off to an interesting start, right? Like there is, and that's not what this podcast is about right now. So there's so much going on, but I still just, like, at the end of the day, one of the things that does unite us as like a species is just the desire to be outside and the benefits that you get. I mean, there's all these medically proven benefits, but you just know the feeling when you get outside and you just feel better. You spend 10 minutes outside and you just feel better. And it'd be hard not to believe in it, but it's something I am very, very passionate about for sure. Yeah.
And I remember you said that you felt like you had a little bit of skin in the game because you relocated from Colorado to Oregon for this role. Take me in that process a little bit of how did you even join AOS? Because you're like I said, you're the leader, you're the executive director in so many words. How did that relationship even come to be with joining Oregon Adaptive Sports?
Yeah, so I started working in this nonprofit and adaptive sports industry 4 months after I graduated from Warren Wilson College. So August of 2008, I got an internship at what was then called Disabled Sports USA. It's now called Move United. They're a great organization. You should look them up. They're a bit of a like national association of adaptive sports programs. I worked there. That internship turned into a job. I worked there for a couple of years. Very much an office-based position. We were in the DC area. I wanted to move out west and be outside or spend more time outside. So I was able to leverage some connections and make an opportunity happen at the Adaptive Sports Center in Crested Butte, Colorado. And so on that organization, I spent the 5 or so years working in the program side of things. So I was the assistant program director, managing our seasonal staff, onboarding training volunteers, coordinating schedules for athletes, things like that. And that's an amazing organization that has pushed a lot of this adaptive sports industry to a lot of amazing heights in terms of professionalism and quality of experience. But for me, just, you know, this being my, having turned into my career, I was wanting an opportunity to be in a more of a leadership position. That's what my degree is in leadership. And I was seeking an opportunity somewhere where I could have that influence and help to build something great and make a big difference on an organization. And so I found this opportunity just through mutual connections in this adaptive sports world. I uprooted my life from Colorado to Bend, took a pay cut. At the time, OAS wasn't offering any benefits, so it was a risk, one that I wouldn't recommend for a lot of people. But I was at the point of my life where I could afford that financial risk because I saw the opportunity to really, you know, personally chart my own course and help an organization grow. And you know, that motivation, I think it's important. And when you have staff that, you know, is personally invested in the growth of the organization, it benefits everybody. So it's important to compensate your employees well and have strong benefits and make it a really great place to work, because you want people that, you know, see the value in those things in addition to the purpose and the meaning of their work. But I think that helps create strong retention and good teams. And so I was willing to do that as a, you know, on my own personal risk. I wouldn't do that now with a with a family and all that, but I had the opportunity to do it. So that's how I landed here in Bend. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Pat Addabbo is here. He's joining me, executive director of Oregon Adaptive Sports. We're going to get you out of here, Pat, because you got the twins at home.
True.
And I want to get a little bit more candid as an executive director, because it's so much more than a title. What are the things, and no rush on this, but what are the things that keep you up at night? What are the things that are on your mind that it's just you, it's just your wife, you know, you're having a nice dinner, maybe a glass of wine, and you turn to her and you're like, this is on my mind. I'm nervous about this. What is that thing or things?
You know, it's definitely things. And yeah, we've had a lot of those conversations for sure. You know, back to some of the stuff we've already talked about. Sometimes it's my relationship with the board, and it's like, oh, I'm having this one kind of challenging situation with a board member. And this is not specific to right now, but you know, they've happened over the years, and that's something that will consume a lot of my, you know, stress and anxiety. And I, so, you know, that means I need to put a lot of attention to it, because that it's like a garden, right? You got to tend to it, all of these things, but you know, the relationship with your board is something that you don't just set it and forget it. You got to tend to it. You got to call people, text people, email them. And so that's definitely something, if I feel like something's going a little sideways there, that will keep me up. It'll keep me stressed out. You know, the year to year funding, you know, we're still, you know, like we've had a good run. We are doing our best to keep it going. But we are now an organization where, you know, I have 7 full-time employees who pay their mortgages, and they rely on us for health insurance. And so not only is the funding important to carry out our mission, but it's also really, really important to myself and to my team to be able to sustain their livelihood. And so that's something that certainly, you know, keeps me up, is when we're approaching a big fundraiser, I'm working on a big grant, and just every year kind of thinking about that pathway to sustainability. You know, it's an ongoing stress. And then I think that the other thing is just like, it's just like any job in management, it's going to be the little challenges of just managing people, right? Like, we have a team, 7 full-time employees, we have 30 seasonal staff, we have 375 volunteers. And one of my staff, he summed it up really great recently, and I think this is applicable to many nonprofits, is we have a really hard job here of managing enthusiasm, because a lot of people, you know, they want to be involved in our organization, and they do a job that probably doesn't pay them as well as some other job could, or they're just volunteering their time, which there's nothing more valuable than you can give is your time. And they come with all this enthusiasm and passion for your mission, but as the ED, or as, you know, especially my other directors here, my development, my program director, we're the ones that are in charge of seeing all these moving pieces and trying to keep the ship all moving in the same direction. And man, it is hard sometimes to deal with people, and just to try to explain to people and have them contributing to things going in the same direction and explaining why. And I mean, yeah, there's definitely things like that that'll keep me up awake. I'll have a dream about a certain person.
Oh, I assumed you're having. I just assumed.
Because, man, it's hard. These people care so much, so much about what we do. It's hard to manage sometimes. And like any person, it wears you down from time to time, for sure. So,
absolutely. Gotta take those rests, because we know burnout is real in this space for so many various reasons. You said you have 7 full-time employees. Listen, brag on your team a little bit, because you had a consistent number of of employees over the years. You know, what makes your team, your fellow A or OAS employees, what makes them so amazing?
We have a super talented team, and I think, God, there's so many ways that I think that our team is really special, and I think perhaps one of the best parts of my team right now is just their ability to really look out and step up for each other. We all are good at our jobs, and I think a lot of people could do our jobs, frankly, you know, that we're not some super specialized piece of education or something, that, you know, it's about commitment and passion and these things that you hear a lot about. But I love the way that my team steps up for each other. When somebody needs to take time off, I had twins 6 months ago. I took basically 3 months off and my team stepped up and rallied and kept things just cranking right along while I was out. And people have stuff that's going on in their lives outside of work. And I think just seeing how much care and compassion there is for each other and being willing to step up for each other is a super special thing that we have as a team right now. I also just love seeing when my team practices what we preach. You know, you ask, like, do we believe in the mission? You know, I gave you the examples of things that I do, but I see it in all my team members, you know, valuing that time outside and realizing how important it is for them, and knowing that that impacts then their interactions with their coworkers and our athletes and the people they serve. I think, you know, those are kind of two sort of intangible things, but they're super important in creating a really positive, you know, team and strong work ethic and, you know, going hard and getting everything done and all that sort of stuff. Is if you care about each other and you care about the work that you're doing, you can do all that stuff. You know, I'm an ambitious guy. Like we set ambitious numbers, those 20% growths. I mean, that was all part of the plan, right? And that doesn't come easily. So I'm of course impressed with, you know, they're always willing to show up. We got a big event, they'll be there at 6 a.m. They'll bust their ass all day long to do all the hard work behind the scenes that it takes to get all these people outside. But I think at the end of the day, you know, just knowing that you have this super solid group around you that's going to, you know, pick you up when you need it, and then you'll pick them up when they need it, and that you ultimately just see the value in what we do. It's just super cool to see, for sure.
Absolutely. I live here in Philadelphia. We have this, shout out to the Eagles. You know, we just won the Super Bowl. No big deal. We have by the river, by the Schuylkill River, we have a famous row house, and it's a bunch of different colleges, clubs, and I think maybe even like one or two like high-end high schools. They have row houses on the river, and if you drive by there, you see people rowing. And it's like, sometimes it'll just be one person, right? But a lot of times you'll see like five people, and they're all trying to row in the same direction. That old adage or that old cliche of row, you're not always going to be perfect, but you're trying to go in that same direction. And yeah, it sounds like that's what you're trying to provide and do for the team as you lead them. Listen, we're almost, my gosh, we could talk forever. I would not be a proper host if I didn't at least ask you some advice questions. Because in the United States, we know there's about 1.5 million nonprofits registered with the IRS. And so in theory, you could have as many as 1.5 million executive directors. Now, we know you believe that they should either be volunteer or full-time. You can't half-ass it here. Mm-hmm. But I know the title of executive director is on the desired path for a lot of our listeners. I mean, honestly, you could have people that are on your staff that you're like, you know, they probably want to be executive directors and lead their own ship. What pieces of advice would you have for a program director like your younger self, or financial development officer, or whoever who's hoping to lead and sit at the head of the table?
I would say, you know, for those that are seeking to, you know, whether it's start or run your own nonprofit or climb the ladder of the one you're in or a similar one, you know, along the way, you know, take note of a lot of the things that you talk about here on this podcast, the things we've talked about, the business end of the nonprofit world, taking an understanding of what it takes to understand financial statements. And a lot of my job is paperwork these days. It's a lot, you know, I got letters from the IRS and letters from the local city business license office. And, you know, these are things that either I deal with or I delegate to other people. But you end up being a lot of that and just kind of knowing that. But so I think just kind of paying attention and you know, you can gain some of those skills. You know, I think financial skills specifically will benefit anybody that wants to be in this role, because at the end of the day, that is ultimately the EED or CEO's responsibility, is making sure there's enough revenue coming in to support the activities of the organization. I think in the intangible sense is, if you are ascending to that, is seeking out, you know, peer groups or similar groups that can provide you with a great sounding board or advice along the way. One of the best things I did here was I joined a group of local executive directors. There's 8 of us total. We meet once a month for 2 hours, and we bring to the table a lot of like questions, challenges, things that we're dealing with professionally, sometimes personally. Because being an ED, it can be a very lonely job. Mm. You're in a very unique situation, I think, in the professional world of, I supervise a team of employees. They have normal employee expectations of me, and as the head of the business and as their manager, they want to feel supported. They want to get paychecks. They want benefits. They want time off. They want to make a difference. They want to grow their careers. But then my boss is a group of volunteers. And so I don't have a direct, you know, direct real like managerial relationship like the rest of my staff does. I have a great relationship with my board. And that's, again, one of the reasons why it's so important to maintain that relationship, because they are your boss and you got to keep it solid. But that can be really lonely, because when you're needing support as an executive director, it can be hard to be vulnerable and to go to what's essentially your 13 or 15 or 7, whatever the number is, volunteer bosses and ask for support, because they're have a million things going on in their own lives. They didn't necessarily sign up to be your full-time supervisor. And they're also the people that decide how much money you make and whether you should still be in that job or not, and all these kind of vulnerable things as an executive director. So finding other people in similar roles is really critical, because unless you are an ED or a CEO, especially of a nonprofit, I don't think you can really speak to or relate to the experience the same way. It's something that when you talk to somebody, another ED, you just instantly, it's very similar to being what I've learned of being the parent of twins. When you talk to other twin parents, you just have this instant mutual understanding of the differences of the experience. And we're only 6 months into it, but I think it's very similar to being an ED. Ooh. When I sit down and have a cup of coffee with another ED, it's like we have our own language that we can speak. I don't remember what the number is. I think the average tenure is like 5 or 6 years for an ED is like the average tenure. It's very short because it does burn people out. That's, one of us should look that up. Somebody told me that once. I think just knowing that going in for people will be really good. And I guess the last thing I would say too, especially for people kind of like on a similar career path as me, is you might not get the job the way you were expecting it. The hiring of an ED is a really hard process that I think a lot of boards struggle with. And they will either try to do it themselves or they'll hire a firm. But the firm, especially for groups like OAS, where there's so much like community and relationships involved, like the firm doesn't really know what to look for either. And, you know, for me, I got the job because our former executive director, she essentially like retired, you know, her family situation. She was just ready to move on from the job. And the board decided to do a search, and I expressed interest, but I even admittedly at the time, I was like, I don't know that I'm ready for this. And the board felt the same way, but at the end of the day, I, you know, ended up being the best option that we had. It wasn't really what I was expecting, but I just made the most of it. So if you're given the opportunity, start pulling on those levers, look for support, look for good guidance, and do your best to make the most of it. Because it may not be like some super clean process that, you know, I think a lot of small to medium sized nonprofits are, a lot of times if they're looking for new leadership, that's probably because there's something messy going on. So just be prepared for that.
This is amazing. You're actually the first ED, the first executive director I've had here on the Nonprofit Center podcast. And even just hearing you talk about hiring an ED is something I don't think really comes into the mind. It never even crossed my mind until you just said it, Pat.
Yeah.
It never even crossed my mind. Yeah, if you've got a board, they're volunteering, some are more engaged than others, how treacherous of a gauntlet that could potentially be. I mean, this is actually some really good advice. I mean, wow. Again, Pat is here on the podcast. He is really giving you all something. I want to say thank you, Pat, for being here, because we know you've got twins. You're busy. You didn't tell these people this. You just got back from vacation. It's a Monday. You are really gung-ho. You've got the energy. So I really appreciate it. I don't take your time for granted, because like you said earlier, time is our most important asset out there, our most important resource. I want to get you out of here. But I do want to at least shine a spotlight on you a little bit. I mean, you move from Colorado to Oregon. You hop into this role. Like with anything, you're going to be a little nervous, right? I mean, that's just when you start in a new job, and like you said, you're executive director, you're going to be a little nervous. When you reflect on your leadership journey and the growth of Oregon Adaptive Sports, what do you hope to be remembered for, both as an executive leader and as an individual who's impacted the adaptive sport movement? What do you hope people say when it comes to your leadership journey?
Wow, that's a tough question. You know, I think I don't know. It's hard to reflect on yourself, right? I think it's I think for people that I've worked with directly, you know, I hope that they, whether that's my board or my staff or volunteers, that they feel like I help them feel valued. You know, that they know that when they were working with me, that again, they knew how they could make an impact, that they found the opportunity to grow, whether it was professionally on my team or as a board member, and their purpose and meaning in life to give back to an organization, that, you know, that was clear to them. You know, as far as my personal like impact on adaptive sports is, you know, I think I'm always trying to push the envelope a little bit and get creative and to look at some of the bigger problems that often challenge our industry. You know, cost is something, I don't know how much this is going to be remembered by, but I'll remember the fact that, you know, one of the things we did during COVID is the prices we were charging for our lessons, we cut them in half, and then we just have never touched them since. And so I think that trying to make this financially accessible to everybody is something that's been super important to me. And I think just like looking at, you know, what are these kind of like ongoing recurring things that I see in the adaptive sports industry? A challenge that we have right now as an organization that I see so many of our similar groups is like, I sometimes still feel like we're a little bit of like the gatekeeper to access. And I don't like that because our capacity is limited. You know, if I had the time, if I didn't have 2 6-month-olds, I could go ski every day, right? I could go throw my skis in my truck and go Nordic or Alpine skiing. There's nothing, especially Nordic skiing, there's pretty much nothing stopping you from doing that other than having gas in your truck. But for a lot of people with disabilities, there are barriers that exist, whether it's access to equipment or the support. And I feel like sometimes we're like gatekeeping that just because we only have so many volunteers and we only have so many sit skis. And there may be somebody that wants to ski every day, but because of our limitations as an organization, they can't. It's not because of a person's disability or their, you know, whatever's going on in their life. It's because of our limitations as an organization. And, you know, I want to continue to find ways to solve that problem and create more independence and more access for people to you know, essentially achieve our mission to get them outside. So it's kind of another hard thing to define, but like, you know, I hope that there's people that we've served that they felt like, you know, they've seen that change where they've been able to do so much more. And that OAS wasn't the thing that was preventing them while we're simultaneously creating the access, we're also preventing them or limiting it for them, right? And so it's just a sort of an ongoing quandary that I think about a lot that I hope to make an impact on. So
I get a feeling that that impact has been made. OregonAdaptiveSports.org. You can go to their website. I'm going to give you the floor here, Pat, to, as we kind of wrap up, to kind of show and share how people can support the work you all do. We've got the links in the show note. Check them out if you're in that Oregon area. I used to live in Seattle for a little bit of time. I didn't go skiing until the first time I ever went skiing. I was 34 years old, and I was doing it in New Mexico, ironically enough. So you all are doing some amazing work for a lot of the community. Listen, before I get you out of here, again, I started the podcast episode with this. I want to end it with this, because when we talked, you, again, you said there's a rawness to this job. That was something that really, really stuck out to me. We love wrapping up our interviews here on the podcast with a hashtag nonprofit horror story to shine light on some of the real challenges that happen in the nonprofit world. Do you got a story for us today, Pat? Keep it. Don't get yourself in trouble now.
Oh, man. Nonprofit horror story. You know, I can think of some from others that have been shared with me, but I don't know that I'll go there. I don't know. I wish I had thought about that ahead of time. Swim, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. We've had a couple of people that said, like, they thought they were going to secure funding and it fell through. Even honestly, like you said, like, you had a dream. Maybe you woke up and you're like, oh, man, it kind of scared you a little bit. Mm-hmm. You shared some really good insights, honestly, already of some of the realities that come to play when you're executive director of an organization.
Yeah, you know, I think, like, especially being in the field that we are in, where we're doing a lot of adventure sports and dangerous things, you know, risk management is a huge part of what we do. And, you know, I'm knocking on wood here. I think that there are horror stories that could happen. Another thing that can keep me up at night is just, you know, again, somebody's like, enthusiasm getting a hold of them and them doing something unsafe and causing any sort of whether directly or indirectly some kind of harm or injury to somebody, and you know, it's not a fun story to share. Like, fortunately, you know, we have people that get hurt. It's skiing, it's mountain biking, that's part of it. I've gotten hurt doing both of those things myself, but you know, that's the hard part of the job, is like, you got to have your policies and you got all this stuff. And, but man, that's something that the potential of that certainly, keeps me up at night. You know, we've had, not in that sense, but, you know, we get the occasional, like, rogue, you know, volunteer or participant or something that happens. And that rogue could mean so many different things, but, you know, there are things that come up, and when you're the executive director, like, it all funnels down to you at some point, and you got to deal with it. And I think just like having the measured thing of just like, I always try to just think about the big picture. I mean, we've certainly had some things that have happened over the years where you're just like, really, you know, or you did this, or, I don't know. It's hard to go into specifics with some of it, or some of it may have just blocked out of my mind. But, you know, I think, you know, just trying to see the big picture in the middle of those horror moments is really critical, because you'll lose too much sleep over it if not. So, sorry, that's a vague answer to what you're looking for. But, yeah, I don't know.
No, it's okay. Listen, don't think too hard on it, because yeah, you don't want to go in a not good place. We want to keep you positive. Listen, this has been, again, first executive director we've had on the podcast. I do not take your time for granted, Pat. You've got a lot going on. Being able to get on your schedule, I really do appreciate it. Just give a little bit of love to the OAS. How can people, if we had someone, they want to donate, some money, some time. How can people connect with you all?
Yeah, our website, OregonAdaptiveSports.org. That's the best place to go. It's very up to date. We have a great marketing coordinator, Sammy. Shout out to you and Kara, my development director. They do a great job of just keeping all that information updated. So if you want to learn more about our program, you want to learn about how to support us, how to make a donation, how to volunteer, or most importantly, how to participate. If you know somebody here in Central Oregon or in our region that would benefit from our program, send them our website. Hope they can get involved. And yeah, reach out to your local small to medium-sized nonprofit and see how you can help, because we all need it one way or another. And I think it's important. Yeah, I think what you're doing in Swim is great. I was thinking about this, your comment about, you know, the 1.5 million nonprofits, I think was what you said, in Central Oregon here, it's 1,500 501c3s, I think, and a population of 100,000 people. But if you think about it, like what all this, the nonprofits bring you all the best stuff, your library, your parks, your local arts center, your recreation venues, everything that people like to do for fun and education, your universities, it's all nonprofits. And this industry comes with a lot of nuance and complication to it. But I think at the end of the day, we are all working together to create these great spaces for people. So thanks for highlighting the various people in this work. And I hope you're able to just keep shedding more light on our industry. So,
listen, I don't need to say anything other than that. Be sure to share this episode with friends that you know in the sector. This is the episode to do it. 2025 is here. We all need to support. Buy your executive director a coffee. If you know an executive director in nonprofit space, and don't get them the small, get them the large coffee with all the extras and get them a little bit of a cupcake and a side treat as well. Pat, we appreciate you. I'm going to let you get out of here. We love the work that you do, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate the opportunity, Swim. Thanks a lot.